Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Penske Podcast. You haven't tuned in before, this is a podcast where we're running through all 178 episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, giving our thoughts and feelings about each and every one. And right now we're up to episode 7 of season 7. It is Dark Page, directed by Les Landau, written by Hilary J. Bader, aired back on October 30th, 1993. This is the one where Loxana Troi has a dark secret, and some alien telepaths are going to tell Deanna Troi about it. She's not going to believe him, and then Loxana is going to have a medical episode, and Deanna must incept herself into her mind, the mind of her mother, to figure out what this dark, dark secret is. Deanna's here to talk about this one. It's Dark Page, right after this.
What are you doing in sick bay?
Helping. Trying to help Loxana.
How? What were you trying to do?
I was... She was... You, Deanna. Maybe you.
Yes?
You must... How can I explain?
Tell me telepathically. Makers believes my mother's psyche has collapsed in on itself.
I think you know you've hit your sort of free fall season when you're like, hey, guys, we did a dream sequence last week. Should we just do it again? And every other producer goes, yeah, why the fuck not? We're going to talk about Dark Page. Dan is joining us. Dan, how are you?
It's the story of one Betazoid going through menopause.
Again.
And again. Again.
You haven't done a Loxana episode, have you?
I have not.
She's a controversial figure. I get a lot. She's probably more controversial than Pulaski. I feel like Pulaski has taken a turn now where she's sort of more appreciated than disliked at this point. just because of she balances off of the sort of blandness that Crusher has devolved into.
Right.
And at least Pulaski sort of had a character out, that existed outside of sickbay, which it doesn't seem to really exist for Crusher.
Yeah.
What do you think about Loxana as a, like overall, not in this episode, as a character who has been there from probably like the 5th episode, Haven.
Yeah.
And now she's in her final appearance in TNG's regular season. What do you think?
I like a hammy character. I like that she's very disrupt. Like, do I think that she's a well-written character? No, but do I like that she seems to be purposefully the hammiest character in the Federation of Planets? Yeah, I like that. That's that I can get down with. I don't think that they do a great job in this show of portraying women at all. And at least in volume, this adds someone to the mix.
Mm-hmm.
So I do get down with her, you know, in terms of like, hey, you know, show her more. And in fact, in this one, I do kind of like that they make an attempt at developing her character, but you know, let's save that for as we go.
Yeah,
but I do, as a character, I think she's good, and I do like, and I think most, this show has a lot of success when it brings in people's families. Maybe it's just simply because it gives depth to characters that don't have a lot of depth, but I mean, we could go, how, you know, you could go through a list a mile long of all the times that adding families to this show has worked really well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And I mean, it's resulted in occasionally a few of the very best episodes of the show's done. Interesting place to start here. So if you guys listened to our last episode that I did with Dan, we talked about Phantasms. And Phantasms, to me, was an episode that I watched. I enjoyed it. Then I thought about it and I didn't like it as much. Dark Page is a little bit of the opposite for me. I was watching it. I was horrifically bored by it. I got to the end of it
And I was like, oh, that was a pretty nice little ending. And then I thought about it a little bit more, and I now sort of, I think this is the best Loxana Troi episode that they ever did. And they kind of did a neat trick of giving her a final storyline that somehow goes back and retroactively fixes the character. By that, I mean her personality and how she interacts with Deanna makes total sense from what this episode tells us about what happened to her, right?
True.
So her overprotective sort of annoyance with Deanna being like sort of consumed by taking care of Deanna now makes sense that we learned that she lost a child due to her own negligence.
I'll tell you what. I am going to get on the positivity train with you. And I wasn't 100% convinced on what you're saying, but I'm going to take the ride, and I think I can be convinced by that. Because I agree that this was probably one of the most boring episodes of all 7 seasons.
Yeah.
Like, from a pure entertainment standpoint, it is one of the most boring episodes. It has a man with the weirdest smile in all of the Federated planets.
Yep.
Our man Mayquiz with his weird rat mouth. but as you are saying, as you have just said, and I think that's very well stated, is that as you sit there and think about it, it's actually, from a character standpoint, it is a really good episode, and it is a very good end to the Loxana character.
Yeah.
But fuck if it's not the most boring. It's like soap opera levels of boring.
It's really horrific. It has this thing that eventually just became a running joke. What the hell is this race called? The Karen? Something like
Karen.
That? Karen, yeah. Something like that. When the guy uses his telepathic powers, he just like intensely stares as the camera zooms in on his face and this music starts playing. It's so fucking absurd. It's like something out of a 1970s sci-fi movie.
Right.
And it's just... All right, so we'll save the good stuff for the end, because I agree that the first 90% of this episode is pretty horrific. It's like one level on our scale, 1 to 5, garbage. Starting off with the fact that this alien race makes zero fucking sense to me in any sort of like how they would exist, why they don't talk, why they can talk, why they learn how to speak English so quickly. So the basic gist of them is they're a species that only communicates telepathically. So Loxana Troi is called in because she's a telepath. She can handle it. And the aliens are basically normal, except for they occasionally don't know the best word to use in a sentence. Right?
So they're like big. They're like a race of like toddlers, basically.
Right.
Verbally, anyway. I guess. I don't know. It's almost like a little fuzzy on the rules.
Junior high kids who like know how to talk but don't really know the biggest word that they could fit into the sentence. And it's really fucking boring. It drags. Every scene where this guy talks is him going, I was at the, how do you say, bar. And it's right. Like, what the fuck? Like, get the story moving. That's this story powered by a young Kirsten Dunst. Which is the greatest thing, too.
you know, it took me about 30 minutes to realize, thanks to the high-quality, redone sort of newer episodes that sometimes are on Netflix, sometimes are not. Sometimes when I watch it on Amazon, they're on there. The sort of, like, with the new cleaned-up,
yes.
Slightly higher definition look. It was when it went into one of the close-ups of her face that I realized that was Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah. Hasn't changed all that much.
She's a part of the TNG family, I suppose.
Yeah, she is. Her and the one that Ashley Judd, right? Was it Ashley?
Oh, that's right.
One of the Judds. James
Worthy, Ashley Judd, 35 instances of James Cromwell.
Mick Fleetwood.
Oh, that's right. There was another one that Clay and I found the other day. It was like a Saudi prince that bought his way onto the show. I gotta find.
He's on Voyager, isn't he?
Oh, is that on Voyager?
Yeah, I think he's on. So. It's not Saudi. It's the king of Jordan.
That's right. It's the king of Jordan.
Yeah, the current king of Jordan has been on Voyager.
Good for him. That's what I would do. The same if I was the king of America, you would be sitting at home right now complaining to Clay that my stupid self was on Star Trek Voyager for the 18th time. Like, he keeps writing himself into Star Trek Voyager, for Christ's sake.
Maybe that's how we solve the ISIS problem. We get Star Trek Discovery kicked off, and we invite some people over and just have them, you know, unilaterally agree to be in a Star Trek Discovery show.
I like that.
But this episode, tell me why you did not like the first part, because I will agree with whatever you say as long as you mention something that happened in the first 48 minutes.
Well, I think that it shows a fundamental misunderstanding of like how to teach a person a language, and that if anything, them learning it in such a short time failed because they can barely construct a sentence.
Yep.
I feel like you should just teach them that sometimes you don't need to find the word gymnasium. You can just say place where people do push-up. Like, right. You know, there's right. There's a million different ways to solve this puzzle.
Yep.
And it's excruciating to watch them pretend to be bad at the language.
Yep.
And it's awful to make, like, that guy's weird face aside, it's just, they're just one of the worst, besides the little kid gray alien in a cave, they're probably one of the worst alien races that's come together.
It feels real low effort. It feels very much like a season one take on an alien race, where it's just like someone comes up with an idea and they do it, and you're just like, you know what? This idea doesn't really make any kind of rational sense as to either A, how this culture exists, or B, how they learn to interact with humans on some level.
But I kind of want to focus somewhat on because there are a couple of positive things up front that I liked. One is that, having not seen a Luxana episode in a while, I noticed that they did a good job of like dressing her down, and her colors are much more muted, and her hair is not as snazzy.
Yep.
So I thought in that sense, like, I noticed from moment one that they were purposefully trying to do something different with that character. So that helped me sort of fight my way through whatever the hell was going on with the Karens and Mayquist and Kirsten Dunst and side brains that they had. They cut some so Klingon foreheads in half.
Yep.
And we're just like, I just put them on the side. That's fine.
And they didn't even like spray paint them. They're just like this weird putty color stuck to the sides of their heads. It's so dumb. So you immediately get the sense that Luxana is toned down, and she is starting to have like breakdown states.
Right.
Am I to believe that it's because she's interacting with this race that this is happening?
I think so. And again, this is one of the many beats where it kind of sucks, is that what I took away from it is that the increased amount of psychic activity that she's undergoing, the telepathic activity, whatever we call it in the Star Trek universe, is messing with her betazoid wiring, which is good. Yep. I like that. Again, I like that a lot. But I am inferring a lot. I am taking away. I'm just sort of making that up out of thin air. I'm cobbling together what little evidence is given. But essentially, it seems like she is getting messed up the more and more she deals with this all telepathic race.
Okay.
Right? Yeah maybe? Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's what it is, because that has to be. Because it doesn't make sense otherwise why she is all of a sudden consumed by this guilt that we've never seen before.
Right.
So they need like an inciting incident to cause that to come to the front. And they do it with these Karen, who I forget how to pronounce their fucking name, but what's interesting about them is, I don't know if you listened to the earlier episodes we did where we sort of broke down the betazoids and where they go wrong with the betazoids and where they sort of go right, where Luxana in the early episodes, right, is sort of a boisterous, sort of loud woman who will always sort of like explain what people are thinking in front of other people.
Yeah.
And to me, that actually makes more sense about how betazoids, if they had telepathic abilities, would be, because there'd be no need to lie to each other in that society. Because you would know if someone was lying to you. So her sort of the way that Luxana is, as annoying as it is, actually makes more sense to me than as the betazoids would do. And this telepathic race also, I feel like species that are telepathic would eventually stop talking.
Yeah.
Right?
They would. I guess that's the point of this other race. The Karen is that they had no need for it because they were so good with telepathic communication. And I suppose they're sort of not, they can't lie, or they have no filter, or like filters isn't a thing. Because I guess that's the whole point of like their first interaction where he
proposes.
Says,
yeah.
You need husband good or whatever he says, and he's like caveman speak.
He's like, me need puss, you need the D, and she's like, all right, that's it. Smash cut to the credits.
He has a copy of The Game in his suitcase. He's negging her on a telepathic level.
Yeah, that's really the only way to do it.
Right, but I agree with the idea that she's actually a much Luxana is a much better realization of what the Betazoids should be, which is like she's boisterous and loud and has no filter and doesn't really lie because there's no need to. It's not a thing that exists in it,
right?
For a telepathic species.
Yep. Yeah, and I thought it was funny that they pulled this sort of idea out of. They came up with this idea in the seventh season, and it also made me glad that they kind of didn't do it with the Betazoids, because I couldn't handle this kind of race. Hopefully they would do it better than what they did here with the Karen or whatever. But yeah, it just doesn't work out. So we have this sort of interminable episode opening here where I'm trying to even remember what really happens. Like they're basically, it's basically a lot of exploration of how this race communicates. And then we start learning that this guy, and Luxana starts having passing out episodes. Uh-huh. And we learn that this guy is like, I've seen into your mother's mind, Deanna, and there's a dark place. And he says dark place a million times, but the title of the episode is Dark Page. So that kind of confused me. And so Deanna thinks he's talking about privacy, and his mother doesn't want to say. But no, apparently she later learns that her mother has like a psychic hole in her psyche that is covering up something, and they need to figure out what it is. So this guy, this Karen, agrees to stare at each of them while music plays very intensely, and that will sort of cause inception to happen.
Yeah, basically.
Where Deanna will be transported into the dream of Luxana, and she has to figure out what went wrong.
You know, there's a funny tone in the way that both of us are recounting this episode. There's sort of the endless question mark at the end of every statement we make, because it's like, if you asked me to beat by beat recount this episode for you, I couldn't do it.
Right.
And you probably would just agree to whatever I said. Whereas like phantasms or a number of things, yeah, I can pretty much plot it out for you. But this one, it's like the theremin plays and people stare at each other. And
yep.
There's a pond on some astroturf. I don't know.
Oh, it's right. The Arboretum, which is completely artificial plant life, which is wonderful. Yeah, I agree with that. It's just, this episode reminds me a lot of The Offspring, right? Which is the one where Data builds a child. Because that episode to me and Clay didn't amount to anything until the end. Like the whole episode is really building towards this final scene. And the Offspring's final scene where Lal dies and she feels emotion but Data can't is like wonderful. You know, like
it's a great one.
Yes. And this one is, I think it's a lesser version of that just because the Luxana character isn't as forefront to us as Data is. And because her, you know, Data's characterization of not being able to feel emotions makes it more tragic when someone else that he's supposed to love can. But so the end result here is that it's revealed that Luxana was taking care. Luxana had two children. One girl was older than Deanna Troi, and they were out at a picnic one time, and Luxana stopped paying attention. And I assume that the daughter drowned because they show water so frequently.
I actually thought that she had been eaten by a wolf until I went on to Memory Alpha.
Okay.
Like it was obvious that the child had died, that there was an older child that had been essentially erased and was the cause of the overbearing way that Luxana and her daughter interact. I totally got that.
Yep.
But I thought, you know, maybe I'm a dummy, that she was eaten by a wolf while they were in the park.
Right, because there is a wolf that makes a constant appearance. There's a wolf.
There's a lot of wolf going on in this episode. And they, you know, they do a sort of a cutaway thing because they don't have a lake. They don't have the budget to drown a child.
Right. Especially so not one of Kirsten Dunst's caliber. Right.
They were, this kid is going places. We can't drown. they didn't have young Tara Reid there to drown. Not to make a dated. That's a really dated rep. I hope we can edit that part out because that was embarrassing. I was like struggling for a good bad child actor, teenage actor to think that they could drown.
I settled with Tara Reid.
Not every joke works. We've been doing this. This is episode 164.
I've said every joke that there is. Yeah, right. That's we're done at this point.
We're running much like the show itself. We're running low on ideas. But I did think that she had been eaten by a wolf.
Does Memory Alpha actually say what happened to her?
It just says that she drowned.
Okay, she did drown. All right. Yeah, yeah. Good. Not good, yeah. But I'm glad.
Jesus.
I'm glad that I understand what happened there. And anyway, this, I think this scene is really effective. I might be biased as a new parent, but I like now that every sort of sad scene with a child like affects me more than it ever did before. But I do feel that this is a good scene. Like they don't fuck it up, I guess, is my my point. Like it's done properly. It makes sense in context. I think Deanna Troi is a little flat during it, but I'm not going to hold that against what goes on. I think that it's pronounced Majel, right? Majel Barrett?
Yeah.
Someone told me I was pronouncing her name wrong, and I don't think there's ever been a way that I haven't pronounced it like that. But
Who's to say?
It's Mahel Barret. And she does a good job. You know, she tones it down. Yeah. She's a good actress when she has to do this kind of stuff and isn't doing the sort of pompousy over-the-top stuff.
Right. All I can go off of is the impression that it leaves me. And much like with Offspring, that part of this episode, the end of this episode left me with a surprisingly positive vibe after, you know, 35 minutes of nothing.
Right.
So, you know, those strong redemption points, though I do actually, I think I like Offspring more than you guys did.
Okay.
But I agree. This is like a weaker version of the same thing, but it's a huge swing of redemption at the very end of a very boring. I usually take a lot of notes that are mostly like sassy comments about the fact that you can see like seams in the makeup and stuff.
Yeah. Yep.
For this one, I have four things written down and they're all in like 40 point type just so I can see them. And so it fills the page. One is Kirsten Dunst. One is there are lots of extra red shirts in this episode. I guess they upped the budget for extras. Like, I just don't have a lot to say. Like, for the majority of this episode, there's just not a lot to say.
No, it's really true. It's the only thing you can talk about is how little there is to talk about. It's like you just have to be sort of meta about what's going on in the opening. It's just it's so slow, and the script is hindered because it can't really hint at what the problem is.
Yeah.
Because that would give away too much.
Right.
Because the solution is very simple. So what they're stuck doing is just this sort of very meandering, weird, cheesy sci-fi thing of the psychic looking at each other and incepting into each other's minds. And apparently, you're not going to believe this, but apparently this idea had been pitched to them a couple seasons earlier and was kicking around because they didn't know how to do it properly.
Oh, yeah?
And apparently it was going to be a Crusher episode.
Well, that doesn't make any sense.
No. The only thing I can think of is Jack Crusher is somehow involved in it. But I don't know. I don't know how a main character would have a mystery that they don't know about.
Right.
So, I mean,
it's confusing.
Right. And there's no way to get around it without them being telepathic. You need them to be able to get into each other's minds to resolve the thing.
And I think that a lot of I think there's a lot of good stuff in there about telepathy, and I think there's a lot of good ideas about, like, first of all, there's this terrible assumption in a lot of science fiction that any two, like, alien races, you know, each one is alien to the other, but somehow telepathy is a link.
Yes.
Where, you know, if we put on our hard sci-fi hat for a second, it's like, well, no, they'd have different brain chemistry with billions of years of different evolution, and they wouldn't instantly be able to talk to each other. Like, that would be a very difficult process, even telepathically, especially telepathically.
Right.
So to me, that's kind of a cool thing. Like, I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, they're learning how to speak, and it kind of hurts Troy to do it.
Yep.
Like, all that's
They mentioned that awesome. The Betazoids communicate telepathically. Loxonas, Troy says this, through words, and these guys use images, basically. Right. And now that I'm thinking about it, telepathic communication through words makes almost less sense than anything.
It makes zero sense.
It means if I ran into a Spanish-speaking person, I could not telepathically communicate with them.
Right.
Because it's I wouldn't be able to understand them.
Yeah. It's true, is it? If anything, the Betazoids in the TNG universe are the least sophisticated telepaths. Cause they're like, they're the caveman talking ones.
Right.
Everyone else is like painting pictures in their mind and opening new universes and all that good stuff.
And they're just,
Loxana, just like, I like bread.
They're stuck sending each other like text messages basically through their brains, which is absurd. Right. Yeah. That's a very strange thing. I mean,
No wonder they still talk to each other because their telepathy is terrible.
Like, Jesus, could you just say it to me? Just
yeah,
talk.
Exactly. Just tell me where the dark place is already. For it's Christ's
like
sake.
You know when you were in high school and there was like the kid who was only semi-literate and he had to stand up and read, you know, in front of the class. It's kind of that thing of you must have bad telepaths who are just like, right. Ooh, everyone's just kind of cringing, waiting for the full words to come out and everything.
Exactly.
So you thought that this was a good redemption for Loxana, huh? You thought it worked out well for her?
I actually do think, I actually think it's better, even better, because it took, like, as I marinated on it, and as I'm marinating on it now, I do think that it is a very good redemption for her. And I am actually now totally on board with your assessment of this episode, whereas I came into this being like, this is maybe the most useless episode of all time.
Right.
I do actually think now that it is pretty solid in a character from a character standpoint. I don't think that I would ever watch this again. I'm going to be totally honest.
Right. Yeah.
I'm glad that I totally saw
agree.
It.
I feel the same. I feel that's kind of a trait for Loxana Troy, not just because I don't really care for the character, but like I don't need to watch Half a Life again. You know, the one where she marries the guy who has to kill himself or mm-hmm. she falls in love with the guy who has to kill himself. I feel like it's that kind of a thing, and those are the two best Loxana stories, but they're just sort of like the idea is better than the execution, I guess.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely the case with Dark Page, where what they've done here makes the character make sense retroactively, which is a very impressive thing and something I think that the show should be trying to do in its last season. Like, that's kind of a goal that I think they should have for some of the characters. And they do a good job with it here. And
In modern TV terms, right, there have been a million of these sort of episodes that, as a grand TV experiment, your Losts and similar, come to an end. There's always those episodes that everyone applauds where they take one minor character and draw them out to a satisfying conclusion. If this was like an episode of a modern TV show, if the, you know, pick any one of the long narrative sort of TV shows that are on now, mm-hmm. and they gave such a minor character such a satisfying end, such a complete ending, it would be like rave review, you know, it would be at the top of every list. It would be the thinking man's choice for every sort of, you know, Vulture AV Club top 10 episodes.
Yep.
So it is good in that way, but they just don't do a good job of delivering the message so much. But I like it a lot because I like that they took a minor character and really brought it somewhere.
Yes,
in a way that they don't do with the major characters.
Right,
frankly.
Which is maybe the sort of tragedy if you think about it too hard.
It is.
So
I think that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah, that's it. Well, with that said, I'm going to turn the dark page and we're going to take a break. I'm going to play an audio clip. We're going to come back. Me and Dan are going to give our final thoughts and ratings for Dark Page.
What happened, Mother? What happened next?
I don't remember.
remember.
You have to. You can't hold it back. It's killing you.
The dog got away. She ran after him. We didn't notice. Why did I look away? Why wasn't I paying attention?
You have to forgive yourself, Mother. You have to let it go.
How can I? I let her die.
It was a terrible tragedy. The worst thing that can happen to any parent. I know you feel responsible, but it was an accident. And what you're doing isn't fair to Kestra.
All right, Dark Page, final thoughts and ratings. You went first last time. I guess I'll go first this time. This is sort of a law of averages thing. The first 35 minutes are a square one. Everything here is just terrible for the first 35 minutes. We've had the second dream. It's basically a dream episode in a row, which is offensive enough. The storyline doesn't go anywhere. The Cairn race makes zero sense in context of anything. I don't understand why the Federation is talking to them. There's nothing going on here for the first 35 minutes that inspires any kind of the narrative is going to go here. And then it gets to a good point where, as I talked about, it rescues a character. It makes a satisfying ending. It's a pretty, it's a misty-eyed kind of ending if you're that kind of a person. It's solid. It makes sense. It makes you feel something, and it wraps up a character. I'm going to give it a 3. And it's one of those threes where Phantasms is the more watchable episode, but this has a stronger moment than Phantasms ever does. So this one's a 3 for me. Phantasms is a 2.
Whew, I did not see that one coming.
There you go.
Oh, gosh. You're making a lot of valid points right now, and you have genuinely convinced me of the validity and the importance of an episode like this. If nothing else, because it takes the thing that we have all been complaining about in the last, 20 episodes or whatever, of not enough character development, and gives us what is probably, I don't know if there's a more genuine character episode than this one.
Right.
I can't think of one.
Yeah.
Maybe there's probably one, I'm just not thinking of it right now. And for that, I applaud it greatly, and I think it does a very good job with that, and I think that it does the job of using art direction to get that across in a way that most episodes don't,
mm-hmm.
in the way that they treat the character, treat Luxana as a character, treat her costuming and all of that. Like, all of that's really good. And I really get that, and I really was able to get down with that. But fuck if it's not just the most unwatchable shit that they put out.
Yes.
So I'm going to go ahead and give this a 1.
Okay.
This is the biggest one for me. It's the hardest one. Just because they have to be there's only so much technical prowess that a man can stand. Like, I like metal and I like anything guitar stuff, but I'm not going to listen to a Steve Vai album in my free time. Like, I don't care how technically adept someone is. If you don't entertain me, I'm not going to pay to come and see you. And this just does not entertain. It's still a show at the end of the day. To enjoy it. I have to be willing to sit through it.
I think we're just sort of fencing here with opinions, because I think it parrying back and forth. It's the, because I don't want to misstate how terrible the first 35 minutes are.
I get it.
It's very, very bad. So I feel, I don't know if a moment is enough to save it. I think this is one I'm going to have to sit on for a little bit and think about whether or not this is a 2 or 3. I can't give it a 1, but it's definitely a 2 or 3. And maybe I'm just thinking about the ratings too much. And maybe it's more important about what the episode actually does. But It's one of those things, and it's just, I agree with you, I'll never watch this again. Like, why would I watch this again?
Yeah.
So
there's no reason to.
Right. Just, you know, you meet some insane person who wants to see all the Luxana episodes in a row.
Right. The one person who does Luxana cosplay at every comic book convention.
Sean Murphy. And
right, exactly. Next time Sean and I hang out and we watch all the Luxana episodes together and we wear our Luxana costumes and he goes big joyful Luxana and I put on my brown sad Luxana costume,
yep.
Then we'll do it. But otherwise, you know, I choose to be entertained by the television that I watch. I know that's a hot take, but I like it. I like my television to be likable.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stick with my one, but I 100% appreciate the opinion you're putting out there, and I agree that it does important character work. But also, fuck it.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a pretty great tagline for it. That's the episode. Oh my God, guys! Thank you very much for listening. If you're on YouTube, by liking the comments, appreciate it. If you're on iTunes, a rating, a review helps get the show out there. Facebook.com/ThePenskePodcast, liking the comments there as well. You can go to Patreon.com/ThePenskePodcast for the price of less than a cup of coffee a month. You get exclusive content. We do Jurassic Park. We do movies. We do all this stuff you can only get on Patreon. And you can always shoot me an email at ThePenskeFileVideo@gmail.com. I think that's it. It should be it. And, yeah, if you don't want to leave comments out in public, you can email me. We'll bring it up on the show. Always good fun. Season 7, sailing along. Episodes are falling by the wayside here. And, you know, we're moving on. What the hell's after this? Attached. Do you remember what Attached is, Dan?
Not a damn clue.
Attached is the Picard and Beverly have a psychic connection because they're being, like, held prisoner.
Ooh, kinky.
Yeah, and they reveal their deep... dark feelings, which Ooh. Does not involve a drowning child.
Mature love.
Yeah, mature love. It's one of those things. They're starting to wrap. They're like, you know what? We started back in season one. We should just finish that right now. They did it with Luxana, and now they're going to do it with the Picard-Beverly relationship.
Right on, man.
Dan, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Guys, I will see you next time.